The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey friends, welcome back one more time to Afternoons with Mike. On the line with me today, I've never had the privilege of meeting this man face to face, but boy, have I heard about him. And he serves our nation, all of the broadcasters especially, but his writing is heard on secular as well as Christian stations. He is a podcaster, he is a pastor in Nashville, and he is the vice president of communications for the National Religious Broadcasters. On the line with me is Daniel Darling. I'm going to call you Dan. Welcome to my show.
Hey, it's great to be with you today here in Florida.
It's so nice to have you. Now, I tell you, I think my phone call today to you, I'm not sure if I have brought down on the phone line all the cold air up in Nashville, but it's freezing. It was almost freezing in Orlando today. I got up this morning, it was 34 degrees.
Which is like a crisis in Florida, right? It might as well be Antarctica for Floridians, right?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, once you're down in Florida for at least a year, your blood turns to orange juice. And then on top of that, the humidity that we have down here makes it feel colder. Now, I'm qualified to say that. I grew up in Indiana, and I had all the experience of cold and winter. And we had one winter where it went 23 below zero. And that's not wind chill. That's actual air temperature in southern Indiana. So I know what cold is. And boy, I tell you what, when I moved to Florida, it might be a lot warmer on the thermometer, but it was still cold because of that humidity. And let me tell you, Dan, it was freezing this morning, almost literally. But I'm so glad to have you on the line. How was it up in Nashville today?
Oh, it's great. It's a little brisk here, you know. It's hovering around the 30s, you know, similarly weather-wise. But it doesn't, you know, we have four seasons here, but they're all fairly mild. I'm from the Chicago area, and so our winters in Chicago were much more severe. So I'm able to handle this pretty well, but things are good here in Nashville.
I know that it would be very temperate there and not bad at all, although you can get cold and you can get snowy. I was up in Nashville about 6 years ago at this time, and man, you guys were hit with a big, almost like a blizzard, and it shut down the interstate, and it was a mess.
Yeah, we occasionally will get it's pretty rare. I mean, typically every year we'd get like maybe half an inch every so often and it melts. But we had just moved here when that big snowstorm came in. But typically it's not too bad.
Yeah, we were up there. My daughter was doing some work in some of the studios up there, some songwriting. And my wife and I were looking forward to going to the, you know, hear some music in Nashville, and it was so cold. We had to delay our trip into the city one day because literally it was dangerous, icy roads and all of that. So, yeah, that was a weird week to pick to go to Nashville, but we had fun anyway. And boy, I tell you what, your bio, you are one busy guy, and for a young guy, you have accomplished a whole lot, and I'm so grateful for you. I had a chance to be at the NRB about a year ago, in late February, I believe it was. And who would have known, Dan, that that time when the NRB was there in Nashville, at the Opryland Hotel, that the world of 2020 was about to unfold. And it was a wild one, wasn't it?
It really is. And I think back to that NRB, and I think back to the first couple of months of 2020, and just unless you were a, you know, scientist or a doctor or something or a prognosticator, none of us really had the idea of how just life would change over the next year and a half in ways that we just are just profound. And like, you know, I'm not one given to a hyperbole, but it's pretty safe to say that 2020 and even into 21 will be one of the markers in history that, you know, our grandkids will look back and probably have to take a whole semester just to study that year.
I think you're right.
How crazy it is.
And the implications on our culture, and then the residual implications, even in the election of 2020, it's profound. It really is amazing to see what happened and the things that are yet being talked about. Like you said, it's going to extend probably beyond 2021 in terms of the implications of all that's happened this year. But we're praying that we can somehow get back. And I know that the conference that you help oversee with the NRB is scheduled again, not for Nashville, but this time for Texas, and in June. And I'm hoping that everything is it was delayed, obviously, because of the pandemic. Are things looking like it's going to happen in the face-to-face version of it?
Yeah, we're very confident that it will. And in fact, we were fortunate. You know, we were one of the last conferences to be able to meet before, even as we're packing up in February, conferences were canceling left and right at the Opryland there. We moved the conference from March to June. So we feel very good about that. You know, it's in Dallas, Texas at the Gaylord. There's a few reasons we feel good about it. Number one, we're starting to see cases around the country drop and the vaccine rollout begin to pick up speed. And number two, these hotels have really worked hard to be able to hold events and do it in a safe way with distancing and masks and other things that we have to adapt to. And you're seeing conferences even being held now and even into March and April that are doing it in a safe way. And so by the time we get to June, even some of the most pessimistic prognosticators are saying that things should start to inch back toward normal. And we just believe, NRB believes, I mean, one of the uniquenesses, you know this, unique things about this, about our convention is just the networking. There's not a place that you can go if you really want to get involved in Christian media, if you really want to get involved in broadcasting or television or film or digital communications or public relations, all those, the wide spectrum of things, there's not a better place you can go to network, to meet people, to build relationships, and really get equipped on how to communicate in the 21st century.
I couldn't agree more, and I absolutely was astounded at the range of people that attend this. Everybody from actors all the way on down to broadcasters like myself. And then you had the, if you're a broadcast equipment nerd like I am, you've got all of the kind of like businesses that support radio, from everything from hardware to speakers. If you're into missions, there were missionaries there galore, and important outreaches to the entire world. So it does. It's a, to borrow the word from that movie that I laugh at every time I see it, The Three Amigos, there's a plethora of offerings that the NRB brings about. But my goodness, it is so great to have you on the line. I want to hear a little bit about your background. You said you're from the Chicago area, that you grew up there?
Yeah, I did. I grew up in the Chicago suburbs, born and raised there, and I still have some fondness for my home state and home city, you know, so I'm consider myself a Midwesterner. Although I it's funny because I'm kind of I'm a Midwesterner, but a Southerner at heart, I think, you know, like we love it here in Nashville and love country music and love, you know, some of the things that we see here in Nashville, but also a Midwest guy. And it's interesting, a lot of folks from the Midwest have moved here, so I feel at home.
Nashville is a wonderful city, and right there where we had that conference last year, that was so much fun to be able to walk by and see the radio station right there inside the Opryland Hotel, and that was a blast. And I too love country music, and that's I got my start in country radio back in the 70s up in Evansville, Indiana. So Nashville was close enough to Evansville that I would have a lot of music artists that would come up and sit in on my show with me and kind of like just spend some time there. And that was a blast. And so we always had the influence of that going on in that area. So yeah, Nashville's one of a kind. Were your family members, were they believers?
Yeah, so I grew up in a Christian home. You know, it's interesting. My parents were first-generation Christians. My dad grew up in kind of a nominally Christian home, but not wasn't really. They didn't go to church. It was a broken home, really, with a lot of dysfunction. And when he was in his 20s, it was, so 1971, the Billy Graham Crusade came through Chicago. In 1971, my dad went and he walked forward and became a Christian and really changed the trajectory of that whole family. So I have a lot of fondness for Billy Graham. And
You
know, I'm not doing what I'm doing if he isn't faithful to preach the gospel there in 1971. My mom actually is Jewish. She grew up in a Jewish family. And when she met my dad, she became a Christian. So we were raised in a, you know, in a Baptist church. Kind of my roots are, you know, going to Baptist church every Sunday. Actually, every Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday. And that habit, it's interesting, that habit, you know, when you're a kid, we just didn't think about it. We just went to church. It wasn't like, hey, what are we going to do tomorrow? And I've come to really appreciate my dad's faithfulness in leading his family that way and building that habit and that rhythm that to me has become really precious.
That is a great heritage to have and something fun. I don't think young people realize just how important what happens in those years, those formative years. When you look back on it, they do become more precious, don't they?
They really do. And it's interesting because we often think that what forms us are these big moments. And I think they can be formative, right? The camp meeting where you walk forward and pledge to give your life to Christ and follow Christ, or the great sermon that still stirs your heart. And I have half a dozen of those moments in my life that I'll never forget. Mm-hmm. But what really has forms us is those week in, week out, hearing the word preached, singing the songs and hymns, a lot of church services that we've forgotten and don't remember. Those really form us over a lifetime.
That is well said. It's so true. Those small things cumulatively really add up to an entire legacy of memory that we have been given that really help us in moments. And I tell you what, God made us, the mind, the way the brain can just, all of a sudden you'll remember something in the stores of your memory. It's always amazing how something will pop back up and you'll think of it and it will take you right back. Maybe it was something that you heard on the radio. A cut of music will often do that, but just kind of jar something back up. And that is so cool the way God allows us to have those memories. When was it that you really knew that you had this thing for communications, for either writing or speaking or preach? I mean, you're doing all of those things right now.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. I mean, I really, you know, as early as I can remember, I loved words. Right. And I love to read. So my mom says that I was reading the newspaper at, you know, a really young age. We got three newspapers at home, Chicago Tribune, Chicago Sun-Times, the Daily Herald. And I read all of them. I read the news section and then I read the sports section. I read it every day. I read biographies. I read, you know, mysteries. I just loved words and I listened to the radio. We did not have a TV in our house, but we had radio. And there's something about radio that helps you form mental word pictures and really forms you. So whether it was radio classics like your, you know, adventure series and radio classics or listening to the sports on the radio, but a lot of Christian radio, listening to teaching and talk on Moody Radio there in Chicago was really formative. And then, when I was in middle school, well, they called it junior high back then, you know, I had a teacher who looked at a few of my writing assignments and said, Dan, I think you've got some talent here to write. And, you know, when you're a awkward, clumsy junior high kid with, you know, bad glasses and acne and, you know, you're not one of the cool jocks or whatever, to have a teacher just find one thing that you're good at meant everything. And so I just took that and ran with it, really for the rest of my life. And I've always been in some way involved with words. I mean, I was talking to my wife the other day and just saying, you know, I just basically, my job is to words, whether it's I'm working communications at a Christian organization, whether I'm editing, whether I'm preaching, whether I'm writing books or writing articles or hosting a podcast. It's just what I do is words. And so I've always loved it. I've always loved to write. And I've always loved forming words and reading things. That's just kind of what I am.
And I tell you what, that's a great description. When you talk about radio being a medium that really forces, it forces the imagination to go along with what you're hearing. And you're right, when you don't have the visual happening in front of you, like what happens on television, then your brain is doing something of visual proportions while you're listening to these things on the radio. Now, who were your favorite speakers that you would listen to?
Well, so when you think about Christian radio, I think of listening to Moody music at one point. You know, this is, and my kids don't even have a category for this, but the fact that we had tapes, right? And mm-hmm. you had to go to a Christian bookstore and listen to tapes, and then we had CDs and you could sample them. But you couldn't just tell Alexa to play your favorite station. Like, they don't even have a category for that for streaming. So you listen to, like, Moody like would have music for Saturday, and I listen to music. But then the teaching, you know, I in college, driving back and forth to work, I listened to Chuck Swindoll preaching and doing these character profiles of Moses, of Joseph. And I was absolutely captivated, and it had such an indelible mark on my life. I would listen to David Jeremiah preach. I would listen to these guys, and I would just think, oh, this is what preaching can be. And I don't think people quite understand the bond that listeners make with the radio teachers. When you're sitting in the car, you're at a particularly tough moment of your life or a vulnerable moment or whatever, and you hear a sermon, even a snippet of a sermon, that really can change your life. And that's, you know, that's why I've always been a huge fan of radio. I just think of Christian radio. I just think it has a tremendous impact.
I agree completely, Dan. And, you know, there's been so many times that I would be thinking about something, get in the car, and just exactly what you said, you turn the car on, and then my radio pops up, and there's our station. And somebody like Tony Evans or David Jeremiah. David Jeremiah is a guy that I just love to listen to for a number of reasons. His Bible knowledge is amazing. But as a speaker, he's got to be one of the smoothest deliverers of communication I've ever heard in my life. And I try to find a pause in his voice or where he says something or says, it doesn't happen. This guy is smooth. And, oh, I love listening to David Jeremiah. And then I know right there in Chicago, you had to have some brushes with the Moody Church and Erwin Lutzer as well.
Yeah, I did. And Dr. Lutzer, I remember, you know, I've listened to him. Grew up listening to him on the radio, Moody Church, and what a historic church mm-hmm. that has been faithful since, you know, the 1800s, and what a legacy it has with their Founders Week and with Dr. Lutzer and before him, you know, Warren Wiersbe and others. So, yeah, it's a great legacy there.
It's wonderful. Well, I'm talking to Dan Darling, and we're going to be talking a little bit about where we are today, and not talking about the weather on that, but where we are today with the world and communications. There have been more things that have happened in the last month that I would think it's safe to say that people would never have believed it if they'd been told 2 years ago that some of these things would happen, like with Twitter and with some of the other issues in communications. We're going to be asking Dan about that in a moment, so don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike. My guest is Dan Darling. He is the Vice President of Communications with the National Religious Broadcasters, and we'll be right back. On the line today with Dan Darling. Dan is the Vice President of Communications with the NRB, and for radio people, for television people, it's one of the most important organizations if you're into Christian broadcasting. They've been around a long time. I think I went to my first NRB when I was working in Christian TV, and this would be back in 1978. And during those years, the NRB was, oh my goodness, it was a very important aspect, and it still is. And in those years, it was held in Washington, D.C., and in recent years, it's moved around. I know you were in Nashville a couple of times, and this year it will be held in Texas, in Grapevine, right outside of Dallas, and really looking forward to that one, and hoping that my son lives in Fort Worth, so it's right in that area, so we're hoping to be able to combine a little bit of business with pleasure and see them and catch up with my four grandkids out there. But Dan, darling, it does much more than just help with conventions. You're a pastor. Tell us a little bit about the call into ministry and how that happened.
Well, it's interesting. I've always felt compelled into two worlds. I've always loved ministry, vocational ministry. I've always felt called into that ever since I was a teenager, and I had folks kind of affirm that in me. I just love preaching. I love ministry. I love church life. I even love, nonprofit parachurch work, equipping, coming alongside the church. I mean, even when I'm doing national parachurch work, so I've worked at a denominational level, Southern Baptist Convention, and I'm working at a national level with NRB, mm-hmm. and of course, I'm writing books and doing all that. I always am thinking of that in how does it equip the local church? Because I feel very, very strongly that the local church is God, the locus of God's work in the world, that whatever God calls us to do in the world often takes us, it means that we're doing more than what we're doing on Sundays in church, but never less. Mm-hmm. The church is the focus of God's work in the world. So anything we're doing, I want to equip the church, even as I'm writing books or articles, I'm just thinking, how do I equip ordinary Christians to live their lives on mission for God and the world? So I've always felt I love the church. I love Sunday. I've been going to church my whole life, and I cannot wait to go to church on Sunday. And then I've always felt the call into kind of cultural, political stuff. I've been reading presidential biographies and ethics and public theology, all that stuff my whole life. And I've always loved that world too. And I guess where the two meet is where I just feel like anything I'm doing out here, how can I do it to help Christians think well and live on mission in the world? And mm-hmm. those are kind of my two callings. And, I've, in terms of my official positions, I've bounced back and forth. I've served as a senior pastor, and now I'm an associate pastor at a church here in Tennessee. I've served in, for public policy organizations. I've helped friends of mine who've run for office. So I'm kind of bouncing around to all these sort of places.
That's wonderful. Tomorrow I'll have David Clausen. You probably have heard of them, Family Research Council.
Oh, I love.
Yeah, and he's going to be on my...
I love David. And
go ahead.
David was an intern for me at ERLC, so we're very close friends. He's a brilliant guy, and I'm glad you're having him on.
Yeah, he's been on before. He's a Central Florida. He's an Orlando guy. And he went to school here in Orlando, and it's just so awesome. So he's going to be on with me again tomorrow. And he is, you talk about a thinker. You're right. He is a big thinker and knows so much about how the Word and what we're seeing today interplays. And I want to get into that with you right now a little bit. I mean, in communications, a person like yourself that is as well-read as you are and have been since you were a young guy reading those three Chicago newspapers, there have been things, Dan, that have gone on that cause, I think, even the most seasoned observers who are involved in communications, it's left us all scratching our hair a bit, and we're wondering what in the world is going on and what is going to happen. So first of all, could you do one of two things here in this order? Could you kind of comment on what has happened in this last couple of months, last month especially, with Twitter and these other big tech organizations kind of starting this cancel culture thing? And then where do you see it going once we get past wherever it is that this is going to turn? What's going to happen with all that? Are we going to stay, in your mind, in this cancel culture? So if you could address those, what impact do you think, I know you're surprised, but Tell us about how this hit you.
Well, I think there's a lot of ways we got to think about it. You know, it's a complicated, you know, when you think about the tech platforms, first let's talk broadly about the cancel culture. I do think there is a really, really disturbing cancel culture, just kind of in society.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're moving away. I think social media has exacerbated this, but we're moving toward an honor and shame, more of the honor and shame kind of culture that has been prevalent in other parts of the world. We're kind of moving that into the West, where, you know, we don't just do activism and speak out. We have to shame people. We have to destroy people. I think this is the case across the left and the right. I mean, I think, you know, there's this kind of just visceral desire to shame people. It's very disturbing. I think now when you have like the corporate world and tech companies all kind of in one ideology and frame of mind, I think it's a little bit makes us nervous, you know, that we want to just kind of cancel people for beliefs that everybody held, you know, 5 years ago,
mm-hmm.
And beliefs that are, you know, kind of universal truths. So I think that is very disturbing. When you get to the tech companies, it's a complicated situation, right? Because technically these tech platforms are not, you know, they're not government, they're private companies. So they have, in some ways, they have the right to decide what kind of speech they want to have. And we would, I think, agree with that. At the same time, it's making a lot of people nervous because a handful of tech companies kind of control the flow of information. They control commerce. You know, and when I talk to people, more people are more worried about, they're nervous about social media, you know, Twitter, Facebook, these platforms.
Mm-hmm.
But I think actually what worries people more than those is if you go further back and say, okay, if they all collude and want to, for instance, cut off my web services or cut off payment processing, or, you know, if they would align themselves with the very broad definition of hate speech that you see from like the Southern Poverty Law Center, which would include a lot of people, that could be really worrisome for a lot of our ministries who are pretty platform dependent. I mean, even churches, you need YouTube and Vimeo and all these places to platform your stuff. So that has people worried. What gives me hope is that enough people have raised their eyebrows and said, we're nervous. It's not just conservatives. I've read a lot of old school liberals like Andrew Sullivan and Barry Weiss and Thomas Chatterton Williams and others who I would not agree with on a lot of things, who are nevertheless saying this is making us a little bit nervous. And so I think there's enough resistance that it gives me some hope on this. And then I think you're seeing people like Facebook, you know, I'm not here to defend Facebook, and they've not done everything right. But one of the interesting things they've put together is this independent advisory board that they funded, that they've actually given authority to overrule them on cases. And it's made up of quite a few conservatives. It's a pretty bipartisan board. And I've had some meetings with them and talked with them, and they actually overturned recently four of the five cases where Facebook deplatformed someone, and not just here, but around the world. So that model is interesting, and I'm curious if others will go to that. But then you have places like Twitter, which are totally inconsistent, right? I mean, in terms of what they consider incitement. So it is a strange new world. I think a lot of people are nervous about big tech. And if, of course, most of the people that work in these big tech institutions, not all of them, most of them are more liberal. So, you know, who's making these decisions of what is hate and what is incitement? It has a lot of people nervous. And I think one of the areas for NRB, one of our big areas of advocacy, is going to be on this issue, engaging with the tech companies, engaging with Congress, engaging with the administration.
And there's this whole issue of speech, which obviously they're controlling and in some cases canceling. Speech, let's say, during the election cycle, to very, very actually after the election, and right before the whole very sad day in D.C. on January 6th, with the canceling of the Twitter account from the president, and not just the president, but just scores of other people around the country. A lot of them are broadcasters whose accounts were suddenly just cut off. Do you see, are there talks from what you're hearing with some of these people that there's going to be an avenue back in, or they are just going to be cut off?
Well, I mean, every case is a little different, right? So I'm curious where that goes. You know, when it comes to the president, my sense is he will get back on these platforms. These others, I'm not sure. And, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I'm very nervous about it, like you are. The content moderation piece is a really, complicated issue. I think most of us would agree there's a category for taking content down. You know, when you talk about violence,
mm-hmm.
and
sure.
Threats and all that stuff, incitement. Where those lines are hard for some of these platforms to do, and some it seems like it only goes one way. It only goes toward the right, not the left. And so I think those are conversations that we're going to be having in coming days. You know, NRB would say that we don't want to get rid of Section 230 because to do that would actually stifle speech, but we would like to see it reformed. And one of the things we would like to see is more transparency in the decisions, a better appeals process when something gets pulled down, a swifter appeals process, and fairness.
Explain, if you will, 230, just for our listeners who may not be familiar with that.
Well, Section 230 is fairly complicated, but it's a part of the Communications Decency Act that gives immunity to big tech companies for stuff that's on their platform.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, they can't be sued for content that's on their platforms, whether it's libel or it's violence and all that stuff. And that's actually a good thing because it actually produces more speech. It basically means that there's more speech. You know, you can control the comments on your website. You can all those things. But a lot of people are saying that I think rightly that it needs to be reexamined, and maybe there needs to be much more oversight and some controls in there so that there's more transparency and more fairness and more appeals process and some of those things. I think the model that Facebook has put out is not perfect, but I'm curious, and I could see other tech companies follow suit where there's an independent advisory board that is made up of legal scholars and bipartisan folks who can review each case and make decisions on those things, and then their decisions are binding. You could see a model for that, because on the one hand, I think a lot of us don't want too much government control of private companies. On the other hand, there needs to be some oversight and accountability.
Yes, there does. And there really does. There is a need for that. Let's say it that way. And, you know, the ground is changing even as to what speech definitions with regards to things like hate speech, and with a lot of things that are happening, that you could see a day if this direction continues to where a pastor could be censored and maybe even charged with hate speech just for teaching something from the Bible that would call something that God calls sinful. And if that's referred to in that context as being sinful, that could be determined to be hate speech. So there's a lot of concern, and we are praying that what is right, and I'm really thankful that at the end of the day, it's not up to us. We have God on our side, and he's the one who's going to help us through a lot of these really difficult decisions anyway, and I'm thankful. But that does not mean that we can't stay vigilant. We must be vigilant. And people like you, I'm so grateful for you, Dan, because you're right on the front lines. Before we go, speaking of front lines, the state of California is of particular interest to a lot of news that's happening today with what's happening from the governor on down and the speech that's being stopped in churches and even church services being forced to close or if they do meet with the risk of great fines, and that's what they're facing out there. When you talk to people from California, what is that like right now?
Well, I mean, it's very disturbing. I mean, and obviously in this pandemic, it's been really just on the one hand, we understand that, you know, governments have to try their best to control the spread of the virus. On the other hand, you know, it does seem a lot of governments have been kind of capricious about how they've made these rulings. And it should be disturbing that, you know, on a number of levels that church services are not considered essential. And I get that we have the technology to do it online, and thankfully a lot of our churches have been able to pivot pretty quickly. But we all know that the public embodied gathering is essential to worship. So it's very disturbing to see some of those things. And I am with you that I think one of the things people are looking around the corner and seeing that's making people nervous is the broadening of definitions of hate speech to include, you know, historic Christian doctrine. That, you know, Christians have believed. Now, I do think what's wise for us is to really heed 1 Peter, where Peter talks about, don't be surprised if you face persecution, if you face
fiery trial,
for your faith, that Christianity in every generation has been countercultural. At some points, to be a faithful Christian means that you're going to be at odds with the prevailing culture. And so Peter really warned the church about that. And I think that's a good book for us to read. And yet he also says, let's make sure that when we we're facing persecution, not just that it's legitimate, that it's not because of something we're doing. So I think even as we are nervous about the increasing hostility toward Christianity, we also need to be wise to say, how do I steward my words? How do I steward my witness in a way that I'm not just intentionally being provocative in a way to provoke, that what I'm being persecuted for or what I'm being silenced or canceled for is something that is, you know, clinging to the truths of Christian orthodoxy and not just because I'm kind of being a jerk.
Yep.
For lack of a better term. So I think Christians are increasingly facing those decisions.
Well, there is a lot of needs out there that we need to be praying for in these type of things, without a doubt. And I know that Matt Staver, who is the leader of the Liberty Council, is working so diligently with a lot of these pastors in California and really keeping what are their rights and our rights as believers up on the, I guess you could say, the front burner of attention, and that is helpful, and we're certainly grateful for that. But one of the things that we all can agree on as Christians is we need to be praying right now on all of these issues. We just beseeching the Lord and asking God for His mercy and trusting with the fact that He's leading us and guiding us, and He has not left us without His help, and I'm grateful for that. My guest today is Dan Darling from the NRB, Vice President of Communications, and I'll be back with Dan in just a moment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike, and you're in tune to the Shepherd. On the line with me today is Dan Darling. You may see him in print as Daniel Darling, and that is Dan. And he is a pastor. He is the Vice President of Communications for the National Religious Broadcasters. And that is an important organization that we are at The Shepherd a part of. And radio stations, TV stations all around gather for an annual convention that is so helpful. It is a networking paradise for people to meet, the people that they get to hear on their own radio stations, and it's knowledgeable. It's just a concentrated time. One of the most fun weeks for me in the year has been when I got to go to this convention. It's great. Dan is also, in addition to that, you lead a podcast, and you're the host of that. And one of the things I want to talk about right now is that you have authored a number of books, and they cover a variety of themes. But again, your pastoral heart comes through in a lot of these as well. For example, one of them, the characters of Christ, the original Jesus. Tell us about what goes into your heart and your mind when you get an idea to write a book.
Yeah, you know, I've always loved writing, as we talked about, and the Lord just gives me these ideas. You know, if you think about my current book, The Characters of Easter, and that follows up on the book, The Characters of Christmas. You know, I've always loved character profiles. Back when I mentioned earlier, when I was at college, I listened to Chuck Swindoll profile these biblical characters and just made them come alive. And for Christmas, you know, just thinking about those people around the nativity scene, and these are ordinary people, and they were swept up in the story of Jesus' incarnation and his birth. And of course, as we're thinking about Easter right now, we're in the Easter season, the characters of Easter, and you think about these ordinary people who were part of the greatest story in human history, and Peter and John, who were just young men who followed this itinerant rabbi for 3 years, gave up a pretty stable life and stable business, and they were part of this ragtag group that turned the world upside down. Or you think of people like Pilate, Pontius Pilate, where he stands at the apex of history. He didn't want to be there. He's got to make a decision, and you know, he thinks that Jesus is on trial, but really he's on trial before the Son of God, or the religious leaders, or the Romans who end up crucifying Jesus. So I think looking at the story through the lens of the people who were there. So that's what kind of motivates these. And then I've also written some books on some issues that I care about. So I wrote The Dignity Revolution, which is about what the Bible says about human dignity and how that can impact the way we see ourselves and see the world. I just think that's such an important thing in these times. And then my book on words, Away with Words, we've talked a little bit about that, but how should Christians steward their words online? We live at a time when it's never been easier to publish. It's never been easier to press send or to, with a few taps of our thumbs, a few strokes on the keyboard, we can say just about anything. And what should we be thinking about as we're engaging online? So those are some of the topics I've tried to address.
You know, that whole thing of words, you're right, as believers, we have an accountability not only to each other, but to God for our words. And that's a different scenario than I think a lot of people are currently thinking. And free speech does not mean that I'm free to say just whatever I want to say about any person and have no ramifications to that at all, although it feels in times that that is the current, maybe prevailing culture before us. But as believers, we are held to be aware that what comes out of our tongue, James called our tongue is like a rudder of a ship, and that small part of the body can do a great deal, and it can do a great deal of damage in a very short thing. So that's speaking generously, speaking kindly, speaking with real deference. That's a wise thing to do, isn't it, in this day?
It really is. And, you know, 1 Peter 3:15 says, have an answer for every person for the hope that lies within you, but do it with gentleness and kindness. So he says, we need to speak to the questions of our age. We need to be bold and unafraid and unflinching, and yet do it with gentleness and kindness. This idea that courage and civility are not enemies. They can really go together. Mm-hmm. The loudest person in the room is not the most brave, right? And so I think that's what Christians need to think about, that God doesn't just care that we are on the right side, but how we're saying it. And sometimes Christians act like, you know, it doesn't matter how I say it as long as I'm speaking the truth, but that's not really a biblical formula. But God cares about the shape of our words.
Yeah, and he does. And sometimes we think we're speaking truth when we're really speaking our own opinion. And as one friend once told me, what makes you think that you hold all truth? It was a stinging comment in the moment, but boy, did that stick, and was it ever right? And we just got to be careful. We must be careful. And that's That's a bit of wisdom coming to us from Dan Darling, my guest today on Afternoons with Mike. Dan, as we look forward in just a few moments that we have left, you're looking forward to this upcoming June convention for the National Religious Broadcasters. What is shaping up as a primary theme in this year, 2021? What do you see that being?
Well, I think there's a couple of things emerging. Obviously, we're in a new administration, so there's a new reality in terms of some of the religious liberty issues, some of the issues on, Christians, nonprofits, and some of those religious liberty issues. So we're watching that very, very closely in terms of our advocacy work. And then obviously the conversation about big tech platforms and censorship, we're watching very, very closely. But then also, we want to equip people. And I think coming out of COVID, one of the things that has occurred to a lot of people, just the importance of Christian media, radio, television, and particularly church media. A lot of churches during COVID had to pivot really quickly, and now they're saying, okay, we've been doing this for the better part of a year. How do we get better at doing our live stream? How do we get, we're going to gather again, but the digital stuff's probably going to stay. So if people come to the convention, there's going to be a lot of equipping on church media, on podcasting, on digital stuff. And then also, I'm finding a lot of people who have done digital stuff like podcasting saying, how do I get into radio? Like, how do I make that transition? And so I think we're going to have some equipping on that as well. So I really encourage people to come June 21st, 25th in Dallas, Texas. It'll be a great time. We have some great speakers lined up and just great networking. So I want to give a huge plug for that.
What is the website for the NRB that people can go to and check that out?
It's nrbconvention.org, I believe, and they can register for the convention there.
It's well worth it. Again, so many people will be there from all across all media, and that would include movies, television, radio, print, ministries galore, and lots of opportunities to meet the people that can really help you and learn, and you can grow, and you can try out new pieces of gear that might help you in your ministry. And there's just so many things for it, and I'm looking forward to it. And Dan Darling, Vice President of Communications for the NRB, thank you for being with me here today and taking some time out of your morning as we record this for playback later today. I'm so excited to have you. And, of course, this will be turned into our own podcast called Afternoons with Mike. You can find us on all of the services like Spotify, Apple, iTunes, and Google Podcasts. So, Dan, thanks for being with me here today, and we look forward to maybe getting a cup of coffee with you at the convention.
Absolutely. I cannot wait to see you there, and just grateful to be on the radio in Florida.
That's all my time for today. Special thanks to Dan Darling. I'll see you next time right here on Afternoons with Mike.